It is 2:15, so we welcome back Lori for part three of Zimun, I believe. Part three and the final part of our fascinating discussion on women and Zimun. Vakasha.
All right. Hi, everyone. I'm so happy to be back. So happy to see you back here. Get started another week. I want to share with you, before we start looking into sources, something, a little kind of fun project that I run a website called Derachah.org, which is really an educational initiative about these this area of mitzvot. Derachah is co-sponsoring with Torah in Motion this series. And we did this kind of fun project this year. I'm going to show it to you if I can get my screen share working the way I want it to work. Okay, let's see. That was step one, which I hope was successful. That was step two. Yes. Okay, here we go. So here we have something we kind of created this year. We printed them out. We called them Zimun cards. So what is a Zimun card? Apropos of what we were discussing last time about women making Zimun and the strong halachic basis for women to be making Zimun and the hesitation that we often see for women to do it. Talking to a lot of people, we found that one of the big barriers to women's making Zimun is not really knowing what to say. Our first topic tonight is going to be talking about the text in Zimun. So what we did is we printed out little insert cards for people to put into their benchers. This was sponsored. It's actually nice. This was sponsored by two bat mitzvah girls who are twins. And they're the oldest in their family. So their bat mitzvah meant that they suddenly had the occasion to make Zimun very frequently. So they took some of their bat mitzvah money to sponsor a print run of the Zimun card. And the Zimun card, the idea of the Zimun card is that, and we also made a PDF version so people could have on their phones. The idea is just that it shouldn't be that the reason someone's not reciting, that the reason women are not reciting Zimun is because they don't know what to do or say. That's the idea of the card. We made a version with transliterations. We made a Sephardi version in line with what we saw last time, that the Ben Ish Chai was very supportive of women reciting Zimun. And sometimes there's a misconception that anytime women might want to participate in something ritually, that's only in the Ashkenazi world and not in the Sephardi world. And this is a nice example where there's very clear Sephardi psak in favor of the practice. So we made this little card. Actually, one of the nice a punchline that we had last week, I got a message from a friend of mine who works at the National Library of Israel. And it may be that our Zimun cards will be joining their Birkon collection in terms of the modern Israel collection of the National Library. And the truth of the matter is, honestly, they should, because it represents something. And it's interesting to think about why this doesn't exist necessarily in your standard bencher. And it's interesting to think about how much of our ritual life is shaped by what's in print and what's to hand. So let's talk about the text a little bit. The text of Zimun is actually more flexible than one might think. And that's maybe the one drawback of these Zimun cards that we made, is that they might make people not realize how much flexibility there is. So let's talk about the basic text of Zimun. The core text of Zimun already shows up in Rambam. It's pretty short. The Omer, Rambam's discussing Zimun here. The Omer, Nivarech Shalchanu Mishelo. So the Mezamen, the person leading Zimun, says, let us bless the one that we, from whose food we ate. The Kolonin, and everyone responds, Baruch Shalchanu Mishelo Tuvo Chayinu. You know, blessed is the one from whose food we ate and, you know, and through whose goodness that we live. And then he says, Baruch Shachan Mishlov Tvocha. You know, the Mezamen repeats that line. And then he says, Birkat HaMazon. That's it. That's the core text of Zimun. So it's kind of funny, actually, that we get into the discussions that we get into about women reciting Zimun and what text women would say when the core text of Zimun is, in fact, so brief and actually not gender specific at all, right? Nevarech just means let us bless, and that works for men and it works for women. And that's the essential text. What's going on? Well, a couple things are going on. First of all, we have there's a Gemara in Pesachim that kind of introduces the idea that maybe something else is going to get said before benching. And this Gemara in Pesachim should sound familiar to those of you who have heard of Sephardi Zimun, because it's very similar text, right? Amrulei Havlan v'Nivrech. They said to him, this is the story in the Talmud is of students who are eating at someone's house, and they say, give it to us, or give us, or let it be. v'nivrach, and we will recite a blessing. By give us where they're referring to in the context is pretty clear. They're asking for a cup of wine, because one of the ways in Judaism that we indicate that a ritual is significant is by establishing the ritual over a glass of wine, right? That's if you think about it, Borei Pri Hagafen shows up an awful lot in different rituals where it's not obvious that it should show up. It's at the wedding, right? It's in Kiddush, it's in Havdalah, it's here in terms of benching. And the reason why the wine's there is to lend chashivut, importance to the atmosphere. So they would say something to get the cup from Birkat HaMazon. There's a passage from the Zohar, which I'm not going to read the whole thing to you because I'm going to be honest, I don't fully understand it, even though I can translate it. There's a passage from the Zohar which suggests effectively that for a bracha to really take effect, there should be some kind of an invitation. Now, Zimun itself is an invitation. And so they wanted to kind of like add an invitation to the invitation. There's this impetus to for the bracha to have full force, that there should be more and more preliminaries to it. So that's what the Zohar says. And Magen Avraham kind of picks this up. So as he says, Katuv b'Zohar, Reish Parshas Devarim, Shiyomer Havlam v'Nivrach. It's written in the Zohar at the beginning of Devarim that you say this line that we saw in the Gemara. Give it to us, let us, and bless. Kikol mili dikdusha b'azmana, because any matter of sanctity requires some kind of invitation or convocation. Umizen ogim bilshon ashkenaz lomar rabotai mir vilin benchin. He says, that's why in Yiddish we say rabotai mir vilin benchin. We say, gentlemen, let us bless, because that's a preliminary invitation in the spirit of the Zohar to get our bracha in force. And they respond with this pasuk from Tehillim. The pasuk from Tehillim is, by the way, I'll just say parenthetically, it's a little interesting that we say it because it includes the name of God. And we're going to see that there's a big halachic distinction between a zimun that includes the name of God in the sense of Nevarech Elokeinu Shachal Mishalo versus one that doesn't. And it's kind of interesting that Ashkenazi zimun plugs in a pasuk with the name of God actually fully said, irrespective of the occasion. But of course, the rules for saying God's name in the context of a pasuk are a little different from the rules of saying God's name in any other context. So that's how that can kind of work out. What's also kind of interesting is it's sort of clear from the Gemara and from the Zohar that the context of Havlam v'Nivrach really fits best over a glass of wine. And effectively, we've ditched the glass of wine. And that's not really what we refer to anymore. So we have our language of Zimun that we're more familiar with in Ashkenaz, it's Rabotai Nivarech, right, is the common way that it's said. And the Kolba says, you know, why do we say Rabotai Nivarech? Midrach HaMusar, L'chol Mishivarech, Shitol Reshut Min HaGdolim HaMasumin Kan. It's Musar, it's nice, it's good manners, it's the way to behave. You ask for permission. This is a really important explanation because effectively what we've seen then is the core text of Zimun really starts with Nivarech. The preliminaries are considered to add to the level of bracha in a mystical way, but they're really fundamentally preliminaries. And the nature of the preliminaries is on some level being polite, being proper. That's why the language also of Rabotai. Rabotai is sort of like gentlemen, my fine sirs. You know, it's not just collegial address. It's a very flowery form of address. And it's not really specifically addressed to the person that you're eating with, right? The father might say Rabotai Nivarech, even if he's eating with his two teenage sons. They're not exactly in a concrete sense in his life, rarefied fine gentlemen's in contrast to the father. And yet that's the way you say it, that's what's done. It's flowery and it's very polite and it's very ceremonial and it's an addition. The Sephardim keep much closer to what we say, to what we saw in the Gemara. And the thing that they emphasize is that we're asking God's assent. In other words, we're asking for this idea of we're blessed to the highest sanctified God. And then the response is Shamayim. And that response, Shamayim, is basically saying we're asking permission of heaven to say Birkat HaMazon. So rather than heaping flowery praise on those eating with us, we're focusing our praise on God and on Shabbos. That expands to, you know, saying things like with the permission of the Shabbos queen. This is all relevant because on the one hand, one of the biggest barriers to women reciting Zimun is not necessarily knowing what they should say. And on the other hand, what we've just seen is on a technical halachic level, it's not clear how much it matters. Rabotai, for example, with the flowery language, really in theory could refer to men as well as women. It's not, it is a gendered term in a technical sense, but we're not really, again, we're not talking about the person next to us being the lord of the manor. We're just saying, you know, my fine sirs. It's a more abstract ceremonial form of being polite. Rav Hengen tries to deal with this issue, and he says that this is an interesting question. Can you include men in it? We're going to be talking about mixed women later. He's talking about women are making a zimun for themselves. This is his case, the case that we've already dealt with. Women are making zimun for themselves. And the question is, the man is there. Now, what we learned previously was Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and Rav Aaron Lichtenstein said the man there can respond, and even that it's preferable for him to respond. We saw also there were some other views, like Rav David Cohen of Flatbush was not in favor. He thought it was a negative feminist innovation, certainly for the men to respond. But Rav Hengen is asking a kind of basic question. Well, what do you say? So like the man is there. He's not really joining your Zimun exactly, but he may be responding to your Zimun. How do you open up your Zimun? So he writes like this. If the women making Zimun can include men somehow in what they say. And they could say maybe gvirotai v'rabotai. This is very, this is what you say like in modern Israeli Hebrew. This is, you know, ladies and gentlemen. Again, that's really the spirit of the thing, right? The spirit of the thing is not rabotai in the sense of these are rabbanim sitting in front of me. It's I'm being an official master of ceremonies. This is a convocation. Nevarech, o b'shut gvirotai v'rabotai nevarech, shachan mishalo v'chayotze ba'ela, eneni ro'ek peda mitzad adin. So Rav Hengen says, you know what? I don't think there's a problem. Even if, from his perspective, even if the men are sitting there and they're not technically joining the women's zimun, for the women to say rabotai, Azma, technically it's okay. Even so, he doesn't think it's preferable. Mikomakom. And, oh, I'm sorry, I should add, I think he's also comfortable with that with for men. I don't think he'd have a problem with a man saying to a group, remember, the women are obligated actually to be a part when there's a group of three men or more who are eating to join into their zimun. I don't think he has a problem necessarily with them saying, Gvirotai v'rabotai in that case either. But he says like this, Mikol makom im sadu gimel nashim imi shechad u'shnaim, adif sham is a menet tomar gvirotai nevarech, chavrotai nevarech. Chavrotai nevarech probably really comes from the kibbutz, where chavirai nevarech, everyone is a comrade in the kibbutz originally. So that's probably the first place where chavrotai came from. The nice idea of chavrotai, which means kind of like my colleagues or my fellow women, the nice thing about it is the root of chavrotai, chet bet reish, is the same as the root of the word chavura. And remember when we started talking about Zimun, we talked about the concept of the chavura, of the eating fellowship. So there's something nice about referring again to the eating fellowship before Birkat HaMazon. But in any case, basically what Rav Hengen is saying, look, technically you can be very flexible about what you say. I probably have a preference, he says, if there are men around that you say gvirotai or chavrotai. The reason he gives is because he wants it to be really crystal clear that the women making the zimun are not making the zimun for the men. Even if the men are responding to praise God, the men are not joining the zimun. Okay. So that's the first first point. And just bringing up, I don't want to dwell too long on it, but this has been more controversial than what I should think it should be from my presentation so far. Like Rock of Ariel, for example, and this was highlighted very strongly in an article by Rav Joel Walski in tradition. Rav Yaakov Ariel wrote a series of online responses to someone who wanted to recognize his mother in Zimun. He wanted to say, Bershut Ba'alat HaBayit. Three men are saying Zimun. The mother's at the table. He wants to say, Bershut Ba'alat HaBayit. And Rav Yaakov Ariel says no. And the reason he says no is that this is choreget mina mikubal. It's going outside of what's accepted. V'yesh la pirtsa lo mutzdeket. And this is like an unjustified breach. Hanovak nir'e mimavakim chevratiim shemakomam b'makom acher. Ach b'shum af panim ve'ofen lo miskeret zo shebirkan mazon. This is a part of a feminist struggle to recognize your mother, and it doesn't belong there. He's effectively taking the position that this birshut is really now a fixed part of ritual, and playing with it in any way is no longer appropriate. Interestingly, Shlomo Aviner, who can be very strict about this kind of thing, is much more flexible. He says, it's an addition. You can be flexible. You can do different things. So where does this leave us? We had someone write an interesting letter to us under Rachel when we publicized the Shir, the Zimun cards, who said, well, my rabbis say that if a man is sitting at a table with a woman, like a male guest, and there's a couple, and he wants to recognize the Ba'alat HaBayit, he has to say, Birshut Ba'al HaBayit u'bichvod Ba'alat HaBayit. So, meaning with permission of the Ba'al HaBayit and in honor of the Ba'alat HaBayit. And what that position is basically doing is it's saying that this Birshut is a formal halachic asking of permission to lead Zimun. And therefore, there's no flexibility, and you can only use the word of Rishut with someone who would be leading Zimun, but you can give anyone you want honor, which is actually a really nice attempt to be able to balance traditionalism with making room for recognizing, let's say, the hostess at the table. At the same time, it's not really crystal clear how that idea developed, just in terms of the fact, again, that the core text of Zimun really starts with Nevarech, and the Rabotai is really, if you look in earlier sources, it's really related to more as a formalistic, polite act. And that especially seems to be the case in Sfardi Zimun, where, again, you can be asking Rishut from the Shabbos queen. So it's kind of an interesting, tricky thing about how reluctant, back to the importance of printed texts and the influence of printed texts, how even things that in theory might be flexible, how reluctant we are, and sometimes rightly so, how reluctant we are to play with something that's been put in print. Okay, I want to get into the two core issues I want to talk about with the time that we have left tonight. The first test is what we call mikzumun. Mikzumun meaning, can a man and two women, or a woman and two men combine to form a zimun? Okay, that's the first thing I want to talk about. And the second thing I want to talk about, which is related but not identical, is zimun b'shem. All right, when that Zimun has the language of Nevarech Elokeinu Shachal Mishalom. So let's start with Mikzimun, which starts off really with the Mishnah. Now the Mishnah, the truth is the Mishnah's language is not crystal clear, but it's very consistently explained in one way. So the Mishnah's language is Nashim Vavadim Uktanim Ein Mizamnin Alehem. Women, bondsmen, and minors, we don't recite Zimun over them. That's literally what it means. What this has been taken to mean, and here I bring Piskei Rid, is just one of many examples. What this has been taken to mean almost across the board is Af al gav ditnan, even though we learn in the chapter called Mishameitu and Brachot, Dinashim vavadim chayavim bebirkat hamazon, even though we learn that women are obligated to recite birkat hamazon, afilu achi, even so, they're not counted to combine with men to create a zimun. So the way they're reading it is, nashim vavadim uktanim, these three groups, you can't kind of together with them or in addition to them, create a zimun. Okay. Now, again, what we're going to have to be dealing with is the question of how this is different from the cases we've seen, right? We saw that men can make a zimun and women can have an obligation to participate in that zimun. We've also seen that when we're talking about a chavura, an eating fellowship, that one person can make hamotzi for the entire group, where the entire group very frequently includes both men and women. And that's a chavura. And we know the laws of chavura are often very much similar. So something we're going to have to try to understand is why the case of what I call a mixed zimun, men and women combining to form a zimun, where there wouldn't be a quorum among the men alone or among the women alone otherwise, why that's more problematic. Before I get there, I should note that there is a dissenting view about how to understand the Mishnah. The dissenting view is recorded. It's not like a recent dissenting view. This is a dissenting view that goes back to 10th century Ashkenaz, Rav Yehuda Cohen. And what he does is he reads the Mishnah as follows. He reads it as women and badsmen and minors, nashim vavadi muktanim, ein mezamnin alehen. Wait, let me try to get this. I have to remember how he's reading it. Sorry, I'm going blank for a second. Wait. I think he was reading it as for that there's a problem with a mixed group of them, but not necessarily with men reciting Zimun just with women. I might be getting that wrong. The truth is, it's somewhat speculative exactly how he was reading this Mishnah to start with. But look, here's how his opinion is brought in Maram Rotenberg, where we see more the result of reading the Mishnah differently than specifically how he was reading the Mishnah. Rav Yehuda Cohen Amar, he said that women, in fact, could combine with men to create Birkat HaMazon. He brought the following proof. It's an interesting proof. The Gemara in Bracha, remember we started by talking about women's obligation in Birkat HaMazon? And when we did that, we talked about how the Talmud in Bracha in one place raises this question. Is women's obligation on a Torah level? Or is it on a rabbinic level? And when it did that, it brought a nafgamina. What was the practical halachic test that they brought for that? Lotziat harabim. The nafgamina was, can the woman discharge others' obligations? Mashma to hapshita landa mitstarfi. Well, if we're asking about women discharging other obligations, then it must have been clear to them that women could join for the zimun. Di lote mahachim kein adma baileim yichola lotzi. If it weren't the case, they should have asked in the Gemara, well, the nafkamina is, can a woman combine with men to make a zimun? But since instead they asked, can a woman discharge a man's obligation, which is like a further step than combining, says Rav Yehuda Cohen, well, that means that a woman can combine with men to form a zimun. Now, again, he's clearly reading the Mishnah in a non-standard way. It doesn't say explicitly what way that is. I suggested one possibility. Taz suggests a different possibility for what he might have been doing with the Mishnah. Taz wants to say, oh, you know what he thinks the Mishnah is? That you can't have two women and one man, but you could have two men and one woman. Again, he's trying to understand how Rav Yehuda Cohen is reading that Mishnah, because that's not the standard reading of the Mishnah. Okay, so there is this view that is given in the name of Rav Yehuda Cohen from early Ashkenaz that women and men, in fact, can combine, but it is really not the minority. It's really a minority view. It's a dat yachid, pretty much. It's an individual view for the most part. That's how it's understood. Now, here's Rashi. And Rashi explains why women and men can't combine in his way. Shalosh nashim v'chein shlosha avadim, aval ein shtei nashim o shnei avadim mitzterfin im anashim. But two women or two men can't, or two bondsmen can't join with a man to create a zimun. Lefi sheyesh ba'anashim ma she'ein v'nashim u'ba'avadim, because the men are doing something the women aren't. She'ena nashim umrot brit, because the women don't say brit. You remember this also? See, it wasn't just for fun that we went over some of the laws of Birkat HaMazon. They become relevant. There is a view, we'll recall, that women reciting Birkat HaMazon would not talk about Al Britcha Shechatamta B'Yavsarenu, would not talk about the covenant in our flesh, and would not talk about Al Torah Shelimadtanu, would not talk about the Torah that God has taught us. Rashi clearly assumes that women are not saying these things. If women are not saying these things, says Rashi, how could women combine with men to create a zimun? One thing to participate, but another thing to create the quorum. Why? Rashi clearly thinks that the people who are part of the quorum all need to be reciting the same text or the same fundamental text of Birkat HaMazon. It's interesting because nowadays we do say Brit. Would Rashi change his view? One could argue that he still wouldn't change his view because women are not saying Brit is a matter of obligation. We're saying it is a matter of custom, and maybe that's not enough. But basically, Rashi is saying different texts mean can't combine to create a zimun. That's position number one. Position number two is the Maram. We quoted the Maram quoting Rav Yehuda Kohn, and then Maram disagrees with Rav Yehuda Kohn. So when he disagrees, he shares with us something about what he thinks. Veshiv lo Maram. Here's Maram's response to him, Maram Rothenberg. Tomar b'isha, sheina yechola lavo lidei chiyuv doraita leolam. Would you really say about a woman that she could combine with men to form a zimun? Whereas a woman we don't understand as being obligated on a Torah level in Birkat HaMazon, at least not as a matter of certainty? De'im motzi acharin in Birkat HaMazon, im kein doraita hi. Because if she were to be able to discharge other obligations, clearly, if we definitely viewed women as obligated on a Torah level in Birkat HaMazon, pshita d'yechola l'itzdaref, then it would be clear, it would be obvious that she would be able to combine. What's Maram Rothenberg saying? He's saying difference in obligation. If you have different levels of obligation, you can't combine to create zimun. All right, so those are two views that are pretty, if you think about it, those two views are pretty technical and they're specific to zimun. It makes sense why those views would not get in the way of making a motzi together. Everyone's saying the same text of hamotzi. We all have the same level of obligation in hamotzi. And it makes sense why these views would also not get in the way of a woman being able to participate in a men's zimun because she's not creating it. Having a different level of obligation in zimun doesn't mean that you can't participate in it, but it might get in the way of creating it. So that's like a technical perspective on this issue. Now, there's a different perspective, which is a little stronger. And there are kind of like two variations of this. The first is the Ravid. The Ravid says, Nashim chayavim bebirkat hamazon dvar Torah. So he actually thinks that women and men are equally obligated. The af al pichin, even so, ein mezamnin alehem, men and women cannot combine to form a zimun. Lefi she'enan b'nei kviyut. Because women are not able to create kviyut, eating together established in a chavura. This is interesting. On the one hand, we can say that they have motzi together, but what he seems to be saying is that for the purpose of zimun, you need a higher level of establishing that you've eaten together, to call it a fixed, established communal eating. And I would add that this might have some historical basis. I think I mentioned this last time, in that the kind of the historical sources about how they used to eat when there was reclining was that the women wouldn't recline. And if reclining was a sign of establishing the meal along with someone else, so the fact that for the most part women weren't reclining might mean that they weren't eligible for kviyut. Basically, Ravad doesn't think it's possible for women and men to create the conditions under which there would be an eligibility for zimun, because he doesn't think halacha will recognize their eating together as integrated on the level required to make a zimun together. Now, there's another view, and this is inspired by something that's said about women and bondsmen. Nashim vavadim, if women and bondsmen want to combine to form a zimun, they can't. Why not? Says the Gemara. Am I low? Mishum pritsuta. It's considered immodest. Now, why is it immodest? So here's where the interesting question comes up. It might be that the issue here is specific to the bondsmen. In other words, the bondsmen were not regarded necessarily too highly. They are not on the same level as the freemen. So if that's the case, then maybe there's more suspicion regarding their appropriate behavior. And therefore, there's more of a concern about putting women and these bondsmen in a ritual position together. One could argue that a freeman is different. One could argue that a regular male Jew isn't subject to the same level of concern about modesty, or not. The alternative is to say, no, concerns about men and women eating together, where, you know, eating together, we talked about this a little bit, remember, at the end of our Mechitza series, right? There are some of the views about men and women mixing are particularly stringent when it comes to eating together, because there's something festive and relaxed and often alcohol infused about eating. Maybe this is saying that there's a modesty concern specific to men and women, and not just the men, women and bondsmen. Now Rashi here says like this. He says, "Can mefarish time elikaman she'en kviyotan na'a mishum pritzuta." He says, "Yeah, it's not that their eating together is not able to be established; it's that it's not suitable. It's a matter of immodesty." Okay. And he suggests what the problems could be. It could be men and women. It could be men and men. It could be bondsmen and children. There are all different ways in which there could be an issue with women and bondsmen. Now, Sefer HaMa'arot takes us in the direction that's not very mainstream, early Rishon, takes us in the direction of saying, yeah, it's specifically of Vadim who are Prutzim. It is specifically a problem of a bondsman, the immodesty problem. But Rabbeinu Yonah, who is a much more important Rishon, says no. Nashim vavadim muktanim ein mezamnin alehem. Pirish Rashi, de nashim einan mitzterfot, mitoch kach lezimun, afilu im baalehem, mipnei she'en chavratam na'e. Rabbeinu Yonah goes really far. He says, even a woman and her husband, it's immodest for them to join together in zimun. So, and he attributes this view to Rashi, even though that's not explicitly in our text of Rashi. So again, we have two technical ideas about why women and men wouldn't be able to combine to create a zimun. Different texts, different levels of obligation. And now we have something that's a little bit harder to get our fingers on, either that women and men really can't form the level of community that halacha would recognize or need to be able to recognize in order to have a combined zimun, or that there's something inherently immodest. Again, we're going to run into the question of what's more immodest about this than women responding to a men's zimun and participating in that. We're going to have to answer that question. But first, just a little aside, which is that recently there's been a lot of discussion in Israel, in particular, based on connected to a comment by Prima Gadim Rav Yosef Ta'omim in the late 18th century. Rav Yosef Ta'omim suggested that that Rav Yehuda Cohen's position was referring specifically to a woman and her husband and her children, i.e., he was saying that there is a position that specifically within the family, a mixed zimun is okay. Now, Prima Gadim himself then brings the Levush who disagrees and says, not okay, can't be done. But this idea has been floated, okay, that perhaps within the family, if the real concern of combining for zimun is tzniut, or pritzut, immodesty, then perhaps in a family, that concern wouldn't apply because we relate to tzniut differently within certainly a nuclear family. Now, this view has not been widely accepted. I just want to show you before I get back up to the more mainstream views that, let me just find it, that Rav Eliezer Melamed actually recognizes this view as a possibility. It says, Yesh rishanim shekatavu, she'isha she'ikrovat mishpacha mitzterefet legvarim lezimun. There are very early halachic authorities, Rishonim, and said that a woman could combine with men of her family to make zimun. According to their view, our sages made a distinction between close relatives and not. And people who want to rely on this view within the nuclear family are permitted to. But it's more suitable to do the other view. Also, Rav Baruch Gigi, Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivat Har Etzion, has gone on record saying that it could be acceptable to have a mixed zimun within a family unit. But he's been very careful to say that this is not for everybody and that these things are very sensitive matters depending on time and place. But basically what happened is that there was a man named Yonatan Gershon who put out an article in a journal arguing that within the nuclear family, there should be allowed to be a combined zimun. And he got a number of responses. Some of the responses saying absolutely not, but Rav Eliezer Melamed basically saying it is a plausible position to rely on, and Rav Baruch Gigi saying that this is something that can be relied on. At the same time, you know, you have big guns, like for example, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says, "Ein aisha mitzarefet im shnei anashim v'rakat azimun, afilu isha im ba'ala ubaneh." Nope. They can't join within the family, even a woman and her husband and her sons. So this is something that we might see some movement on in our time. It's still not mainstream. There is a view out there that people might rely on to do this within their families, but it is not something that has been widely accepted so far. Okay, now getting back to this question of what really makes Zimun different, from a mixed zimun, different from women answering to the men's zimun and participating in it, or from hamotzi. Let's start with the Ritva. Ritva says something really interesting. Zimun is different because there's a higher level of combining. If you say that men and women can combine to form a zimun, you're basically saying that your ritual is being transformed through the fact that men and women are eating together. What the Ritva seems to be saying is men and women eating together in and of itself is not inherently immodest or problematic. Women responding to a men's zimun is not inherently immodest or problematic. But men and women basically coming together to create a ritual that would not occur except for them coming together, he does think is problematic. Again, he doesn't fully explain. And Chazon Ish gives us a little bit more of what to go on about what this is about. He talks about the nature of this. Nashim ve'avadim emezamnin aleihem. Men don't recite zimun in combination or combined to form one. The hadanashim einam mitzarfot im anashim mishum she'ein chavurutan na'ev einam nikba'in ze im ze l'chavura achat. First, he just quotes what we've seen before. Umihu nir'eh. And nevertheless, it seems to bevirkat hamotzi yotzot bevirkat anashim. They can still have one motzi with the men. V'lo havei kechisaron. And it's not like they don't have a fixed status as a chavura where everyone needs to make their own recitation of a motzi. Why? Didavka lihishtatef bivracha bishvil achdutan in ra'ui. Because specifically to recite a bracha for their unity is not fitting. But it is considered enough of a chavura to have one amotzi. What's he saying? He's building on the Ritva, or perhaps explaining the Ritva. The Ritva said, the problem is you're creating a ritual. The ritual is different now of Birkat HaMazon because of men and women combining. That's a step too far. And the Chazon Ish is saying, in this case it is, and it's different from a motzi, not just because it's only by dint of combining that there's this ritual, but because the subject of this ritual is eating together. It's not just that they're combining to form a ritual, they're combining to form a ritual that's about combining. And Rav Uziel takes this another step, and he says, the whole message of Zimun is really about saying that you're grateful for eating together. He says, this is a fundamental aspect of what Zimun is about. And that is troubling to him. In other words, hamotzi is something you would say whether or not you're combining. There's nothing in the language of hamotzi that refers in any way, shape, or form to the fact that you're coming together as a group. Eating together, you are a group. You are not ritually calling attention to being part of a group. Birkat hamazon on its own is something you would say. Zimun, to do it based on a combined zimun, on the theory that the issue is immodesty, is problematic because it's creating a ritual because, or enabling a ritual, specifically because the men and women are combining. The ritual itself is calling attention to their combination. And on some level, the ritual itself is celebrating and formalizing the fact that they're together. And that's like a bridge too far. It's one thing to say men and women can eat together. It's another thing to say we're going to have a ritual that's going to be about men and women davka eating together. When women join a men zimun, their zimun would have happened without the women there as well. The language of the zimun reflects joy of the people in the zimun eating together as a core group. And then there are other participants. And it's not specifically celebrating, specifically, the men and the women combining together. So that's the argument that's made according to this view, which is not the only view, but it is a very prevalent view. Okay. Last little thing to talk about before we finish up here, Zimun B'Shem. Zimun B'Shem saying Nevarech Elokeinu. Now, I say it as if it's just that very simple thing of Nevarech Elokeinu. The truth is that there are many different versions of Zimun B'Shem that are floated in the Gemara, or already in the Mishnah, based on just how many people are eating together, like gradations of how many different praises of God you could have. If you had a group of 100, that would be fundamentally different in that sense than a group of 10. But what's it really about? Well, the Mishnah in Megillah says, Ein mezamnin b'shem pachot me'asara. You don't recite God's name, Nevarech Elokeinu, in Zimun with fewer than 10 participants. And this comes in the context of talking about a Davar Shebikdusha. So there's a tendency to think that Zimun itself, the shame, would be a Davar Shebikdusha. The only thing that's a little tricky is that the Gemara in Megillah gives a different reason for why you need 10 to be able to recite Zimun with God's name. Kevan debai lememar nevarech lalokenu, because they need to say nevarech lalokenu, betzir me'asara lav orach ara, fewer than 10, it's not derech eretz, it's not the way things are done. It's not appropriate to be saying God's name with fewer than 10. That doesn't sound quite like this is a davar shebikdusha. Okay. Even if it's not a Devar Shebikdusha, you could argue that it acts like a Devar Shebikdusha. So that's like, for example, what Shita Mikubetzit says. He says, Zimun ke'ein Devar Shebikdusha hu. It's like a Devar Shebikdusha. But it's not really the same thing. Mishnah Berurah says, no, it is a Devar Shebikdusha. Why is that relevant? Do the 10 people have to be men? In other words, what if you have 3 men and 7 women? Or 9 men and 1 woman? Or how about this? What if you have 10 women? Can they say Zimun B'Shem? If you say that Zimun is a Devar Shebikdusha, it's pretty cut and dry because we understand, and this is going to be part of a matter of sanctity or sanctifying God's name. This is going to be part of what my colleague Ilana Sober Alsapan Bezrat Hashem is going to be talking about in the next 2 weeks when she talks about Minyan and Tefillah B'Tzibur. So I don't want to cut off too much of her discussion. But that's going to be understood as something that's going to require 10 men, a quorum of 10 men. If not, maybe there's room. So there's a Gemara that kind of opens up the door to discussing this in different ways. But the truth of the matter is that this Gemara a little bit is preempted by the discussion that we had already. The Gemara here compares 100 women to 2 men. And there are different ways of understanding it. Tosfot say, see, 100 women, no matter how many women there are, they can never be like a minyan. Whether it's for prayer, whether it's for zimun, women never get to say, should never say zimun b'shem. The Rosh says, this comparison winds up being rejected by the Gemara anyway. Doesn't matter. And Rashi leaves room that the comparison is with respect to obligation, but that maybe when it comes to making a quorum for Zimun B'Shem, it might be open to women. Even so, you'll remember in terms of what we've learned already, this problem with mixed Zimun. Someone has their microphone on. I'm going to ask them to put it off just so that we can all hear each other. We'll have a question time, and I'm hoping we'll open mics then, but just to let me finish up, it would be appreciated. What's going on here is really only relevant if you think that, to beyond a certain point, if you think that mixed zimun is a possibility. If you think that mixed zimun, as we've learned, if mixed zimun is off the table, then women are not going to be able to join to create a quorum of 10 with men, the same way that they wouldn't be able to join to create a quorum of 3 with men. Similar issues are going to arise. However, there's still the question of women on their own reciting it. And that's where you have kind of this, something that might be a little open-ended. Halacha l'maaseh, in practice, this is not accepted. The Rambam, and then the Shulchan Aruch rules just like him. The Rambam says very clearly, Nashim avadim uktanim, eim ezamnin aleihem, avam ezamnin latzmam. Women don't combine with men to create a zimun, but women can make their own. Women, bondsmen, and minors shouldn't be combining with each other. And women can make their own, and bondsmen can make their own. But not with the name of God. So whether he considers it a Devar Shebi Kedusha, technically, or whether he considers it Zimun B'Shem to be something that behaves like a Devar Shebikdusha. In any case, Rambam is saying a group of 10 women can't do it. There is a view that's mentioned, again, by this somewhat obscure Rishon, Sefer HaMa'orot. There is a view that he mentions that perhaps women could be able to do it as a 10. And he says that Mikol Makom Nir'eh Shelo Limchot Biyadam Milzamen B'Shem. He says, I wouldn't protest if a group of 10 women were to recite Zimun B'Shem, Kevan Shelo is Kor Zed B'Gemara, because the Gemara itself doesn't rule it out. There are ways to read the Gemara, as we discussed briefly, that are consistent with that. Even so, this is not Halacha L'maaseh, and it's not done. Okay, so let's just summarize, and we'll take some questions. What have we seen? In the past few weeks, we've talked a lot about what Zimun is, what Birkat HaMazon is. Last week in particular, we focused on the question of women reciting Zimun. This week, and we saw that both that women can and perhaps must, according to some views, and are encouraged, according to many views, to recite independent Zimun. We also saw that women, according to many views, and this is mainstream halacha, are obligated to participate in Zimun when there are 3 men at the table. Today, we kind of expanded our discussion. We talked a little bit about the text of Zimun, where what we found was that the text is probably a lot more flexible than people have in mind, even though it has become very regimented to people. So to honor tradition, that Zimun card that we made for Derecha is a very reasonable way to help people feel comfortable and recite a Zimun that's appropriate for a group of women, and also it comes as close as possible to what they've typically said in Zimun. And at the same time, fundamentally, it's really flexible until you get to the words Nevarech. Following our discussion of the text, we looked at the possibility of a mixed Zimun, and we saw that there are 3 main positions on that, of why it wouldn't work. The why it wouldn't work either being a difference in the text recited by men and women, why it wouldn't work, perhaps a difference in the level of obligation in Birkat HaMazon. The why it wouldn't work possibly being an issue of modesty or immodesty. And if it's an issue of immodesty, it might be specifically more problematic than women joining or participating in a men's zimun, or than men and women having one person recite hamotzi for the entire group, because zimun is on some level calling attention to and really celebrating and formalizing ritually the eating together of the people who combine to create it, okay, which might be more sensitive. But that's not the only view. We also saw that according to that view, there are some minority voices which might be growing, that within a nuclear family, there might be room for a combined zimun if the issue is really modesty, because that's a context in which modesty is perhaps less at play. And we finished with a very quick look at zimun b'shem, zimun invoking God's name, which may be a devar shebikdusha or may simply be something that acts like a devar shebikdusha. On either account, it's widely accepted lahalacha that women, a group of 10 women eating together, cannot recite zimun b'shem. Though, if women eat with a group of 10 men, there's also would be a question there of the woman breaking off, because again, just as a woman would become obligated in a regular zimun eating with a group of 3 men, a woman would become obligated in zimun b'shem eating with a group of 3 men. I'm sorry, eating with a group of 10 men, which would make breaking off much more complicated. Okay, and with that, let's take some questions. Thanks everyone for your patience.
Okay, thank you. I guess that means I'm on again, right?
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to start with the heavy duty questions. Feminism questions, the meta halakha questions. Why are the poskim so afraid? I guess on this issue, you know, women don't do it. And that's, of course, a very broad question. And I don't know if you're interested on a sociological issue, a halakhic issue, or...
Well, look, I mean, I think so. This is really going back more to what we talked about last week. And it's not all poskim, but there's a concern about what is keeping us consistent with what's been done in the past, which is obviously a very important part of our commitment to tradition. And there's, it seems like women and men is one of these issues that's become a hallmark of feeling safely like we're consistent with the past for a lot of people. And that's something that's being challenged and that can create a lot of challenges. I mean, at the same time, it's not a crazy thing. You know, it's the sense of, would this be, you know, there was a guy who, I think it was Michael Pollan, he wrote about food and he was trying to formulate rules about food. And he came up with like different rules, like eat mostly plants, et cetera, et cetera. The first rule was something like eat food, which doesn't seem like it's explaining much. And then he said, what I mean when I say eat food is eat food that my great grandparents would have recognized as food. Right, as opposed to some of the kind of more interesting concoctions that sometimes wind up on our processed concoctions on our tables. And I think there's something kind of similar going on here. Like there's kind of this intuitive sense of like, well, if my great grandfather would walk in on this ritual, would he still recognize it as authentically continuing his tradition? And frankly, would my bubby recognize it as authentically continuing her tradition, right? So there's, I think that's it's something that can be respected. There are cases where, let's say like with combining to make a zimun, where it's strongly supported in the sources, so that it's harder to make an argument that it should be allowed, especially in light of these concerns. But then there are cases like, you know, women making their own zimun where it's, you know, downright difficult to understand why that should stop women from fulfilling a mitzvah, which is quite possibly even an obligation. Okay, let's move forward.
Okay. Am I allowed to add my 2 cents worth?
Go for it.
Okay. I mean, what you say is all true, but it doesn't, there's so many things our grandmothers, even our mothers, wouldn't recognize about how the changes in the Jewish world. And the broader question is why do the issues particularly pertaining to women, like the fact that a rabbi gets up and speaks English, and when he gives in America, let's say, and he gives, the fact that he has a sermon would be enough to get you in cherem in Hungary. And, you know, so it's just interesting. And it's really a much broader question, sociological question, but they're clearly, is no doubt in my mind that women's issue are the fault line between, and that's the fault. It's no longer Zionisms, and it's not even, maybe in certain circles, it's not college education anymore. The issues that when I was a kid, or even before, you know, that really defined the difference Israel, it's a non-issue. You don't really have people against the state of Israel, like who are Jew, like it's not. Or so it's why you know, women, and I guess it's hard. It's hard for 2,000 years. We've been doing something. That's why the partnership minyanim gets so much pushback, whereas women learning Gemara, which is arguably more of a halachic problem. You know, one could easily make the argument that women learning Gemara is a greater halachic challenge than I'm not saying we have to. Anyways, that's enough.
I don't think I'd go there, but I think there is something about like what's readily visible that I think is part of that issue. Like there's you know, it's readily a woman meaning this is part of what's a challenge, you know. When a rabbi is giving a sermon, it's still kind of like, you know, at first glance, until you actually pay attention, it's still what's been going on. It jumps out at you.
But and they didn't say that in Hungary. Visually. Trust me. Believe me.
I think there's something about women's looking at, I mean, we've seen that with the politicization of, you know, women's photographs, right, and images. There's something about, I'm not talking about traditional values of tznius. I'm just saying there's something about within the ritual that seeing or hearing women participate is, you know, is jumping out at people in a way that other changes don't necessarily jump out at them. And that I think is a factor. It's not the only factor. I think you're right, Rabbi Jay. Basically one of the reasons why I'm teaching this and I'm studying this and I still have loads to learn about all these topics, I'm always learning new things, is because I would really like women's obligations and mitzvot and participation in the world of Torah not to be a fault line. Meaning I don't think that's where we should be. It could be a point of disagreement. Like there are a lot of points of disagreement, but I don't think it's good for our community for it to be a fault line. And I think the more we learn about it, maybe we can move in that direction.
Excellent. I agree with everything you said too, but thank you. Yes, very well put. And it's true. Okay. A simpler question, I think. What about a woman saying hamotzi for men? You know,
That's actually interesting. Years ago, I actually, I'll tell you a story. I mean, people have patience. It's a good story though. I was we were living in Gross and Rav Lichtenstein Zatzal used to give a hashkaf a shir once a week. So it's one week that my husband and I grew up with my mother saying a motzi. I didn't know that there was anything to talk about. I just wasn't aware. So we were in Gross, which is a kollel of YU, and we had a bachur over for Shabbos dinner, which is one of the things that the young couples do. And my husband made kiddush and I made a motzi. And the next week at Rav Lichtenstein's Hashkafish year, the bachur, who nowadays is a good friend of ours, but the bachur got up and he said, Rav Lichtenstein, what do you think of women making a motzi? In my presence, I was right there. And then I was assuming, but what was interesting is I was assuming that Rav Licht, again, I really had no concept that this would be an issue. I just didn't know. I was assuming that Rav Lichtenstein would get up and he would say, not an issue. And that's not what he said. He got up and he said, look, it's technically not an issue, but for, you know, generations, the Jewish man has been making kiddush and he's gone on to say hamotzi. And, you know, why should we deviate from that? Shouldn't we value how things have been done? I guess it does relate to what we were talking about. And I didn't really know what to make of that, I'll be honest, at the time. Given that he was like the posek for the kollel, I decided that I wasn't going to, when we had guests over, I wasn't going to make a motzi because I didn't want to be seen as going against what he had said. Over the years, it's been interesting, especially because, like, for example, you know, I make challah every week. So I feel very connected to the challah that's at our table. My husband and I do really feel, or the way that we experience our home is that it's really a joint home. You know, in a sense, I am a ba'alat habayit and he is a ba'al habayit. So there's a way in which, you know, my making a motzi would be a very natural thing. I'll say, talk on a personal level, I didn't get back to doing it after I left the kollel. And there was something about it having become, this is back to why are things a fault line, right? There was something about it having become an issue that people would talk about or argue about that kind of pushed me away from it. I'm not saying I'll never go back to it. I was actually talking about this today with Ravik, Yeshivat Har Tzion, because someone actually just asked us about it on our site, derechchaya.org. We're going to be putting something up soon. And he was saying, yeah, it's not a technical problem. Maybe it's a matter of minhag. It's not a real issue. The halacha is balabayit botzeya. The person who's supposed to be breaking the bread and making a motzi is the head of the household. But the head of the household is, you know, doesn't necessarily have to be a narrow definition. And the head of the household has the right to delegate things to others in any case. So if the, you know, if no one, if the people who are heading the household, if neither of them, certainly if the husband doesn't have an issue with it, it's hard to see why it would be halachically not okay. There are discussions within the world of halacha discouraging women from discharging men's obligations in various mitzvot for different reasons. And that doesn't come up specifically with hamotzi at all. Maybe it just was assumed that it wouldn't be done. But, you know, it's not the kind of thing that I would go along as a kind of evangelist and saying, you know, all women need to make a motzi. And like I said, right now, I'm not doing it. And at the same time, I think it's actually something that for a lot of couples potentially could make a lot of sense in the sense that it wears, I think, kiddush. And again, you could make a halachic argument for the woman to make kiddush as well. Maybe that should be another shir. When it comes to kiddush, I think Rav Lichtenstein's point about the minhag being very strong that the husband makes kiddush, I do see that as being very firmly ingrained, or more firmly ingrained. But you know, and even there, I think there's room for discussion in some cases. But you know, but hamotzi, it seems much less so, and it seems that especially in the case, not always, but in the frequent case where the woman is really the one who's created the meal, that it could be a very positive opportunity to kind of for her to kind of lead a ritual expression at the table. I guess what I would hope would happen with this is not specifically that every woman would do it or that no women would do it. I think what I would want, getting back to my story, and that might not be possible. And I think in different communities, it's more sensitive. I would want us to be able to get to a place where that's not an issue. You know, where the things that we're making an issue about are things that are something like, let's, you know, combining for Zimun. So that's really something where there's a lot of, you know, there's solid halachic opposition to that. But you know, hamotzi should be something that a woman has to think twice before she's leading it for her family. When, you know, if she has a little kids, half the time she's leading them in it most of the meals of the week. You know, I'm hoping that we don't get that we don't have to be in a situation where that's a real issue for people. I think we have other things to worry about, but you know.
Very well said. I'll add, you know, just to how much is context in place. I remember years ago, somebody was in, I believe, University of Chicago, but I don't remember exactly, told me that they were having a meal, Hillel, you know, Orthodox, Conservative, Reform, getting, you know, hundreds of Jewish kids on a Friday night. So always, you know, what are you going to do? And so they, you know, the Orthodox always insist everybody else has to compromise usually more. So they, we'll all come to a mechitza minyan. But the Conservative or whatever, the Reform, not sure, both asked that, okay, we want a woman to make kiddush. They're going to be hundreds of kids. So they didn't know what to do. So I guess, you know, in Chicago, they asked Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, and Rav Aaron Soloveitchik said, listen, al pi halacha, of course a woman can say kiddush for a man. There's absolutely no question about that. A woman, of course, can say kiddush. On the other hand, for 2,000 years, that's not the practice, and the Gemara has some not nice things to say occasionally, perhaps, about that. But, so, you know, you don't do it. On the other hand, to promote, you know, unity and that, you know, Jewish kids who go to college can come together for a Friday meal, you should allow the woman to say kiddush. So I think a lot of it is, I think that's also a beautiful answer. And a lot of it really depends. And you know, and I mean, I had also the schut to be a student of Rav Lichtenstein for a year. And Rav Lichtenstein was, you know, very traditional, conservative in many ways. And I'm not even sure that, you know, his view might change, you know, 25 years later. And I know Rav Moshe doesn't agree with everything his father did, and Rav Lichtenstein didn't agree with everything Rav Soloveitchik said. I guess one very interesting example is Rav Soloveitchik said not to change nachim. You know, ha'ir ha'vela, ha'bizuya, ha'beli baneha. And Rav Soloveitchik, very small C conservative in these things. Rav Soloveitchik says, we have no right to change the tefillah. There's no Beit HaMikdash. It's halachically bizuya. It's halachically empty. Who cares? And Rav Lichtenstein said, I can't follow that. I'm sorry. There's 700,000 Jews living in Yerushalayim. I can't say those words. So these things are very complex. And like you say, the most important thing is that it shouldn't be an issue. Everybody should do what they feel is right with themselves, or they're consulting with their rabbinic people and communities and whatever. But
it's not so much just that everyone should feel what they do is right, but it's just sort of like there are issues and there are things that aren't really issues, and it's important to be able to distinguish what they are.
Okay, one last question. There's no bottom line here, Zev. Can a man eating with his wife in a dealt bench with a zimun? I don't think there's a bottom line, but...
Look, if your posek is Rav Baruch Gigi, or your posek is Rav Eliezer Melamed, then, you know, and again, Rav Melamed wasn't exactly a cheerleader for this, but he, you know, he honestly puts on the table there's an opinion. If those are poskim that you follow on other issues, then it's, you know, it's a reasonable thing to follow. If they're not your poskim, then it's a little harder, because it's not widely received, but it's something that, like, you know, it's not, how would I put it? This is not something that people, I think it's increasingly something that people would not protest, if that makes some sense. Like it's still not something that, it's not something that's widely done, but it's increasingly something that would not be met with protest. And then there's some corners, like, I mean, Rav Gigi really came out and he said, he thinks it's okay. He just, you know, I mean, Rav Lamed said, it's okay, but I prefer you not to do it. Rav Gigi said, I think it's okay. Okay, if it's not right for your community, fine. But I think it's okay. That's something different. The only thing about it is that for that to work, you really have to embrace the view that the core issue of men and women combining to form a zimun is that whole modesty path of understanding the issue, which is, of course, a legitimate point of view. But I don't think that, I think the difference of obligation perspective is reasonably persuasive. So I think that is just one thing, you know, to think about. Like, it's not, that works according to one understanding, which is a very prevalent understanding. It's not the only one. It doesn't work according to all the understandings.
Ellen raises a very interesting point. If you have a single woman who's hosting men and women at her meal, you were talking Mary, it would seem to be that the woman is obligated to say hamotzi. Bala bayit botzeya, how could she give it to a guest to say hamotzi?
I mean, look, a balabite, about say a balabite can choose to give it to a guest, right? Especially if the guest is gadol mimen or something like that. It would seem that that's really the appropriate, that would be more appropriate in that case. Now, of course, one could say, well, why is the single girl hosting a mixed meal, right? You could make trouble about all kinds of things, right? But at the end of the day, if the single girl is hosting a mixed meal, and it's in her home, then yeah, it would certainly seem like the stronger case. I'll give you another scenario.
Does a widow feel better to you than a single girl? Does the word widow help?
Thank you. I appreciate that. And it's not just widow, there's also divorcees, right? There's a lot of people who find themselves being single and hosting. I was actually about to say, you know, a woman is at home with her kids. Not everyone has kids, but a woman's at home with her kids. Thank you, Susan. I really appreciate that. A woman is at home with her, I would add though, just in fairness, that was the question that was asked, was about a single woman. But you're right, you could describe single women in different ways. But anyway, a woman is at home, let's say with her kids. So she has a teenage boy. Her husband's not there, or she doesn't have a husband. She has a teenage boy. And she has, and the rest of the family, who makes hamotzi? So what's interesting is I think a lot of people would instinctively give the motzi over to the teenage boy to say. It's not so clear that that's what you should really do, right? She's the balat habayit and he's not. And that's, you know, you can make a pretty good case for, you know, it should be her. You might make a case that should be him from some element of chinuch or what have you, education. But really, you know, there's a lot to be said there's a lot to be said for the woman to do it on her own. And I think also, I think actually what you're really getting at, which is a broader question, is just considering we talked briefly about balabait and balatabait in benching. The assumption, which is a nice assumption, that you have like a normative Jewish family, and it's the husband and the wife, and they're all living together, is gonna run through or beneath a lot of halachot. But I think you're right that we have to increasingly think about or consider with seriousness the variety of different constellations people live in, and how that can affect even little things like ritual. And again, what's so interesting is so why would we even ask the question? And that gets back to where we started, right? Because somehow it feels different for the woman to make a motzi, maybe somehow, and there's a hesitation, right? Maybe she hesitates when she has the male guests at the table, because the thing that jumps out to our eye is not, oh, this is the hostess, but somehow, oh, this is the female. And maybe that's, it might speak to some of the same, some of the same issues. Why isn't it obvious?
It's probably more sociological than halachic, though, I would argue. That's sociological fear, not halachic.
Probably. Yeah. I mean, look, there's an interesting, I'm trying to remember, I think I saw a tshuva someone wrote about when there's a widow. Maybe it was in Rav Aviner. Let's say you have a widow. And she's and people eat over her house and they're benching. So in that case, should you really say birshut balat habayit is like almost a matter of really needing to say it? Again, that would rely on viewing the term birshut as really being about formally asking halachic permission, which is not so clear. Now, I don't think it was there. I don't think it was Rav Aviner. It might have been shut mara bazak, like Eretz Chemda. But there's there's that interesting element there, which is like, oh, right. If a widow is leading the table, if she's hosting, or a divorcee, a woman, whatever her situation is the host, and there's no one else there who's the host. She's the one who decides who leads Zimun when there's a Zimun. That is in her authority to decide. And that's something that should be recognized. So that might be a good note.